Hello and welcome to Inside Bahrain. I'm Roshan Mohammed Salih. On today's show, we're going to be focusing on the Bahraini government's offer of national reconciliation talks, which the main opposition in the country has accepted. Will the talks be any different from the last ones, which ended in failure? Or will they herald an end to the political crisis that has gripped the country for 2 years? Also on today's show, we'll be looking at how the international media has covered the situation in Bahrain. Many have accused the media of double standards because of their extensive coverage of other Middle Eastern uprisings, but not of Bahrain's. But first, Amina Taylor with a report on the upcoming resumption of talks between the government and the opposition.
Bahrain has been racked by violence, instability and protest for the past 2 years. The regime has managed to survive through the use of force, minority support within the country, and through foreign military and economic assistance. But it's been unable to crush a persistent opposition movement, which refuses to give up. And weeks before the second anniversary of the revolution, the government has made another offer of dialogue. And this time, political issues are on the table.
This invitation comes directly from the king. It's an invitation to all political parties in Bahrain to sit at the negotiating table. The statement from the king is clear, and the intention is to arrive at a final political settlement, which all parties in Bahrain will accept.
The main opposition, Al-Wafaq Party, which withdrew from a previous so-called national dialogue in 2011, this time cautiously welcomed the offer.
The opposition assures its seriousness to engage in a genuine process of dialogue and political negotiation that responds to the aspirations of freedom, dignity and equality. These aspirations stem from the legitimate demands raised by the political majority of the people of Bahrain. The opposition hopes that this invitation for dialogue is an honest and serious one, unlike previous invitations.
Since the start of the crisis, there have been repeated calls for dialogue, but the atmosphere of distrust from both sides is deep. The opposition want a constitutional monarchy and a parliamentary democracy, while the regime insists on the royal family keeping its powers. The opposition rejected an initial offer of talks in June 2011 on the grounds that King Hamad had pre-selected participants. Then as efforts at dialogue stalled, the government responded by demanding the opposition renounce violence. The opposition did so, but then charged the government with more foot-dragging. Meanwhile, prominent dissidents outside Bahrain say the call for dialogue is a ruse to discourage protest ahead of the February 14th anniversary.
It seems to me that both sides are playing politics and are also deceiving each other. I don't think either of the two parties believes or trusts the other party, but they exchange these words for consumption in order to convince the Americans and the British, who are embarrassed by the lack of any political move from the Al Khalifa.
Foreign powers who have a direct influence on Bahrain, such as the UK and the US, have welcomed the king's calls for dialogue. But with the gulf between the opposition and the regime so wide, expectations that this new round of talks will lead to a lasting solution are low.
In the studio with me today is Nawal Mohammed, who will be looking at what the people have been saying about Bahrain on the social media sites. But first, let's speak to Lamis Dhaif, an award-winning and prominent Bahraini journalist who was forced to leave the country. Lamis Dhaif, I do want to ask you about the national reconciliation talks, but first, your own situation. You can't go back to Bahrain.
Actually, being back to Bahrain is not very safe for me or for people who's in the same... who had the same activities that I do.
This is because of what you wrote and what you said as a journalist?
Of course, and a human rights activist.
Sure.
Too.
So you'd be arrested if you went straight back to the airport, you're pretty sure?
Yeah, let me tell you frankly, I don't know if I'm going to be arrested in the airport or not, but the fact is that 90% of the activists in Bahrain are in jail now.
Mm.
So,
there's a good chance you would be arrested.
Actually, yeah. number of them is now free. You know, you're talking about six, seven, or eight
sure.
people, but the rest of them are in jail and they are accused with a very serious accusation that may lead for them to be in life in a prison.
Okay, we'll talk about you a little bit more, your journalistic work, but the reconciliation talks, the government has made an offer to the opposition has accepted it. What's your reaction to that?
I think that this dialogue is a charade. I think that the government is not serious about it. But on the other side, I think that the opposition should enter it. We shouldn't give them the excuse to say that we are the one who's creating this conflict and, you know, making it going on and on. Mm. Any dialogue without the king or the prime minister or the crown prince is not a dialogue.
The
We can't go. Yes, they are the only decision maker. Mm. The others is only mirrors for their.
But this time, isn't it different? Because they are saying that political issues are on the table this time, you know, and nothing is off the table. So isn't it a different offer this time?
I will say that it's a different offer in one condition. If the prisoners of conscience will participate on it. But if you make a dialogue and many of the very important parties of this political conflict are in jail, I can't say that this is a serious dialogue. I can't say that this is a serious dialogue while you say that I'm seeking conciliation. Yeah. On the other hand, you go on and beat people and oppress people on daily basis.
Do you think the timing of this offer is significant? Because we're coming up to the second anniversary of the revolution now. Is this a ruse to keep people off the streets on the 14th of February?
No. I don't think that they are silly enough to believe that putting such a thing out there will stop people from protesting. Mm. People will keep protesting because nothing is changed. Once things are significantly changed, I think people maybe will stay home. But now there is nothing for them to stay.
I mean, obviously you're in London at the moment, but I guess you speak to people in Bahrain all the time. What are they saying? What are ordinary people reacting in Bahrain? What are they saying about these?
Actually, many people in Bahrain, they rather that the opposition do not enter that dialogue. They want them to refuse it. And I think that's because they're thinking, as I said, that the prisoners full of prisoners, very, very important people and so on. So, but I think that the opposition is thinking about this in a political view.
Yes.
We don't want to give them an excuse for the war to
blame the opposition.
To blame us.
But do you feel that reconciliation is possible between the regime and the people in Bahrain?
Not currently. Not in this current situation. Mm. Things still. I don't see that the government is serious about conciliating with people.
So, very briefly, you feel these talks are going to lead nowhere?
Yes, but actually it's really a little bit good because let the world see that how the government is dealing with the problem.
Okay.
There, you know, Al-Wafaq
I'm actually going to cut you off, Lamise, okay, because we're going to pick this discussion up a little bit later because we have to move on now. The social media sites have been buzzing with talk of Bahrain as usual, and Nawal Mohammed has been looking at what Bahrainis have been saying this past week. Nawal, over to you.
Firstly, let me start with telling you what our viewers have been telling us on our Facebook page. We posted, the US sold weapons to Bahrain at least 1 year after the initial crackdown. What are your thoughts? And Daniel May replied sarcastically, saying, just America promoting human rights again, I guess. Also, we posted another post saying, please send us your comments on King Hamad being voted Humanitarian Personality of the Year in a new poll. Mohammed Dilwa Hussein replied, it's a big joke, that's what it is. And I'd like to know what other pro-tyrant despot committee chose him for this farce of an award. Let me move on to now the other social media platforms and what they've said about Bahrain in general. Nasij News on Facebook posted a photo of the closing off of the 14th of February Street in Bahrain. This is in preparation for a strike against the most recent government actions and, as Nasij wrote, a fight for dignity. Next on Twitter this week, Linda tweeted, that the US State Department needs to investigate the detention and torture of a US citizen in Bahrain. According to EA Worldview, Mr. Abdullah was accused of throwing a cocktail in the direction of riot police, but Mr. Abdullah says he was at home. Since his arrest by Bahraini authorities who raided his home, Mars, in the middle of the night, allegedly he has been beaten and threatened with rape and has been denied access to medication that he needs. Third on Twitter, we have Bahraini Leaks. They posted a message from WikiLeaks' Julian Assange. In the picture, Julian Assange holds a card saying Free Nabil Rajab. Nabil Rajab is the president of the Bahrain Center of Human Rights and is still in detention in Bahrain. Next on Twitter, the Bahrain Ministry of Interior is also very active on Twitter. In response to the call for dialogue with the opposition this week, the ministry tweeted, "Human rights isn't only a legal or political demand, but it's also religious, educational, and a social approach." On YouTube this week, Roshan, we have a video. Let me just play it for us. We have a video that was posted by Christopher Davidson showing a Bahraini police pinching groceries in a Shia village. This video was all over Twitter and Facebook this week.
I mean, Lamise, you saw that video. What are they doing there? It's a bit unusual,
isn't it? They're stealing. Policeman in Bahrain steals people.
Why would they need to steal?
This is very common in Bahrain, actually. And this is, you know, I think people are distributing it because it's funny. But what's not funny is that when they go on to homes to arrest people, they go and steal homes. They steal jewellery, they steal money, anything they find.
Very, very common occurrence. Noelle, you got some more stuff for us.
Yes, I do. In the newspapers, Gulf News posted, had a headline saying, "Political societies and the US welcome Bahrain King's dialogue call." There was a big response to this, and you know, we've had it on the show today, on the all social media platforms welcoming the dialogue. But Free Nabil Rajab wrote, "Yesterday the Bahrain regime were offering a dialogue with their people, and today they're supporting the death penalty verdict on innocent Ali Al-Tawil, who was sentenced to death after allegedly running over a police officer." Toby C. Jones also wrote on this from America, saying, how we'll know when Bahrain regime is serious about change is when it releases its political prisoners and pursues accountability, full stop. Finally, just quickly, in the Bahrain News Agency paper, there's a headline saying, "Bahrain is a model of cohesion and unity. Prime Minister Prince Khalifa bin Salman Al Khalifa says that alien ideas and practices that pose a threat to national security and stability have no place in the tightly knit Bahrain society and will inevitably be eradicated by the patriotic Bahraini citizens." That's all from social media.
Thank you very much, Noelle, for this week. Let's take a brief look now at the other stories that have been making the headlines in Bahrain this week. A Bahraini princess is facing charges of torturing pro-democracy activists. Noura bint Ibrahim Al-Khalifa, who serves in Bahrain's drugs control unit, is accused of torturing three people in detention. Al-Khalifa, who's 29, denies the charges and the case has been adjourned until February the 7th after three witnesses failed to turn up. A Bahraini appeals court has upheld a death sentence against a protester who was convicted of murdering a policeman in March 2011. The officer died after being repeatedly run over during anti-government protests. Bahrain's largest opposition party, Al-Wefaq, denounced the decision and said confessions used as evidence in the conviction were extracted by torture. Bahrain's appeals court has upheld a 15-month jail sentence for a former opposition MP over his role in anti-regime protests. Jawad Fairuz was sentenced for taking part in unauthorized demonstrations. He was also convicted of calling for protests without notifying authorities, but was acquitted of inciting hatred against the regime and of spreading false information. And finally, the European Parliament has passed a strongly worded resolution on Bahrain that calls for targeted EU sanctions against human rights violators, the restriction of trade, and an end to the export of crowd control equipment such as tear gas. However, the resolution only reflects the will of the Parliament and will not become official EU policy. Well, Bahraini opposition activists have long complained that the international media have ignored or downplayed their revolution. Coverage from Western channels has sometimes been hard-hitting, but has generally been extremely sporadic. Meanwhile, coverage by major Arabic networks like Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, which enthusiastically supported other Arab revolutions, has been condemned as being misleading. Sana Okba reports.
Last year's headlines were dominated by the Arab uprisings. We heard about Libya, Syria, Egypt, and Yemen, but Bahrain was largely ignored by the mainstream media, even though it was suffering its own share of violence and repression. So the question is, why the lack of coverage of the events in Bahrain? Is it because of the difficulty international journalists face entering this small nation? Phil Rees, a renowned journalist and documentary filmmaker, doesn't buy this.
I don't think that's a particularly valid excuse. In fact, I think a news organization should, by its very nature, challenge that. It shouldn't just sit down and say, fine, we can't get in, therefore we're not going to report it. I think it has a duty to find ways to get in and report it.
Three times Emmy Award-winning reporter Amber Leon was until very recently a prominent CNN reporter. She was one of the few foreign reporters that was able to enter Bahrain during the heat of the uprising last year. She was even able to film enough footage to complete a documentary on the situation there. However, not only was her documentary not aired as planned on CNN International, but her work in Bahrain resulted in her getting fired from the channel.
You have to look at the foreign policy implications of my reporting, Alex. We have a naval base right now in Bahrain that is giving us access to the Strait of Hormuz, which is essentially where the U.S. wants to be right now in its potential future escalations with Iran. So the U.S. government doesn't want the U.S. media to report negatively on Bahrain because your tax dollars are going directly to empower and enable this regime.
Meanwhile, Al Jazeera Arabic, which played a major role in fomenting the Arab revolutions in the first place, was heavily criticized for turning a blind eye to what was going on in Bahrain. They and other Arab satellite stations preferred to question the alleged sectarian motives of the opposition and Iran. Many speculated that Bahrain's close ally Qatar had put the squeeze on its journalists. But the internet and social media were platforms that governments could not control. Twitter and Facebook in particular were flooded with videos and pictures of the regime's crackdown.
The debate and the way that the Western media has looked at Bahrain is that you've got certain grievances and you've got a royal family that are trying their best. They may not be succeeding all the time, but are sort of trying their best to actually solve the situation. It never comes out and says this is an illegitimate autocratic ruler who represents probably a small percentage of his own population and that there should be democratic change. It never comes out with a basic totem of the need for democracy in the way that it has in the coverage of, say, Syria or Libya.
In the view of many, Bahrain and its allies have widely misreported or underplayed the situation in Bahrain, at a significant cost in national trauma, sectarian rancor, and regional tension. However, with social media more popular than ever, the lid on the story hasn't been kept completely shut.
Let me say, I want to talk about the Western coverage and the Arab coverage. First of all, the Western coverage by the networks of Bahrain. Are you disappointed by it?
Yes, of course. But I have to say that some channels really give us, they shined some light into our case. But mainly, I think that the case of Bahrain is the ultimate example of how hypocrite is the media in the whole world. There is double standards in coverage, in analyzing what's happened, and when it happens to Libya, for example, or Syria, because the world, the modern world, wanted those regimes down. Everybody encouraged those protesters and give them the attention they need. But what happens to countries that they don't want any trouble in, like, for example, Saudi Arabia or Bahrain or such countries, they hush about it.
Do you think that the coverage of Bahrain has discredited international news channels or journalism in general?
I think that people, it's a common knowledge now that the media is not fair and it's ruled by power or money. And the protesters of Bahrain, unfortunately, they don't have the money and they don't have the power to manipulate the picture like what the government is doing.
So it's all about geopolitics, basically.
Of course. And I think you know that the Bahrain government hired many PR, huge PR companies to influence what's on air about Bahrain.
Yeah.
So regard of everything that happens, I think that still many people in the world now know the truth about the Bahrain.
Sure. But what about internally in Bahrain itself? What is it like to be a journalist in Bahrain? Do you have to completely toe the government line? Otherwise, you can't get work?
Yes, of course. Of course, many people are fired in Bahrain, not because they wrote something against the government. It's just because they didn't write with the government.
Mm.
So that could lead for you to be fired. And this situation is not new. Let me tell you something, it's worse than ever. But as a journalist, as a writer that been there for a long time, let me tell you, I've been stopped from writing many times. I've been forcing a lot of sequences about what I write. And
were you harassed in Bahrain yourself?
Yes. Actually, my life were all about harassment before the revolution. But of course, after the revolution, it reached a point that it's not terrible.
You feared violence, basically.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't just verbal threats. It was literally physical threats as well.
Of course.
Yeah. And you kind of had to reinvent yourself, didn't you, after you left Bahrain? You've turned to social media. You've got something like 100,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah.
So now your focus is on social media, is it?
Yes, social media is a place for people who don't... It's a throat for people who don't have a place to talk on. And I think that people trusted me enough that when I first opened my Twitter account, before I have 3 tweets, I have 9,000 followers.
Mm.
And it shows that people trusted me and I have credibility with them. That's why they wanted to see how I analyze the things and the events.
So really briefly, in 10 seconds, do you think social media is the place to go if you want to find out the truth about Bahrain?
Of course. And now it's not only about Bahrain. If you focus on it, you will find that in many countries now people trust the social media.
More than the official
more
media.
More than the official media.
Okay.
The time of official media is going
now. Lamise Thaif, thank you. We could talk for a lot longer, but for today, thank you very much because we've run out of time. That's all the time we have for today, but please give us your thoughts on the show by sending us your emails to insidebahrain@newsandnew.tv. Please like our Inside Bahrain page on Facebook and follow us at Inside Bahrain on Twitter. And of course, we'll read out the best emails and tweets on next week's show. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week for more features and analysis on Bahrain. Bye-bye.